Right, so, important business. I have a bump on my head. I've got a classic case of bump on the noggin.
Oh, no. Not bump on the noggin.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, I came back to wrestling after half a year away on Sunday. Redebuted at Tidal Wrestling. Fantastic. Honestly, after 6 months away, somehow that was one of my best performances ever. Haven't missed a step. Fantastic stuff. Obviously, post-match, especially me, because I throw myself around, I end up covered in all sorts of bruises. I've got a real nice purple one on the arm right now. And curiously, a bruise inside my finger, like my index finger, on the underside, where it bends, just below the knuckle on it, it was purple and itchy and bruised. And I don't know how I did it. But I do know how I got the bump on the noggin. You know, in professional wrestling, sometimes they hit the other wrestler with the championship belt.
To knock them out.
We'll use your own victory against you. I get the thematic element.
Battering it down. Now, I've always looked at that. And obviously, compared to something like the classic steel chair, I'm looking at a belt shot thinking, that's not credible. That wouldn't hurt. So anyway, Ace Matthews clocks me with the title tag team championship and I got a bump on my noggin. And I found out that solid metal sucks no matter what the size.
Mm.
No, it really fucking clattered me. I've never really, like, you know, I've been hit with belts before in matches and the blows are glancing at best. I've never felt the fullest extent of the law on my head. And it, oh my God. Here's a lesson, right? Don't assume that wrestling will be fine. Don't assume it will just be okay. Because the moment you get complacent, you get a bump on the noggin. No, fun times. And just a reminder that for all the people saying wrestling is fake,
you've got a bump on your
noggin. I've got
noggin.
A bump on the noggin, yeah. Like, it's... there may be elements, let's say, that are theatrical in nature, but the bruises are real, as is the case. Anyway, really good show. If you've listened to this the absolute second it's released, you've got about 10 minutes to get to Leeds to watch my next match. Because that will be on the 9th, Thursday, in Leeds, True Grit Wrestling. I did give you the deets last week, but you better fucking hurry. Like, listen to this on your phone, because we're important. Earphones in, get on the bus. So I will see you all in about 10 minutes. enjoy the ride. Hello, everyone. How the hell is everybody?
I'm all right. I have spent my week trying to do all of the work I need to do as quickly as possible so I can play video games, because I'm having a time with some of them this week,
yeah.
And stupid work's getting in the way. But otherwise, I'm all right.
We do need to talk about that, of course. You've both been playing a game that I could have been playing as well, and then we could have all had a chat about it. All good chums together, jolly good company. Yeah, I only found out that Hades 2 came out just before we hit record, because, Laurie, you were talking about it, and I said, well, that checks out. You get early copies, accessibility. You talked about it last week. And then, Conrad, you said you also have been playing it.
And me, having no relevance whatsoever to the industry, the only way I could have possibly played it is if it had been released in some fashion.
Not necessarily. You still have contact. But I was like, did Laura give him a code? Not me.
Look, you can't blame me for this. I tried to inform you this existed.
You did.
I put a thing in our little group chat we do for Podquisition going, hey, Hades 2 released out of nowhere. It's out now. I tried to let you know.
You did let me know. I did fail to check that out because, well, more fool me. But you know what? It doesn't even matter because I don't even care about Hades 2 anyway, because I've been playing the hot new game Fallout, and I think you know which one. We'll get to that. Let's talk about Hades 2 because it's the biggest game going at the moment, I reckon, and I'm sure you two have a lot to say about it. I'm gonna go get a magazine. No, Hades 2.
Yeah, so do you want to start, comrade? Because I had a little dip my toes in during the technical test, and this is your first time having gotten your hands on it.
So it definitely is more Hades. I'll say that right off the bat, and so if you liked Hades, you'll probably like this, I guess. But I have a real love-hate relationship with the new, like, equipment loadout. As someone who never used casts in Hades 1.
I never used them either, but I really like them in this. I like the changes they've made, but I can totally, like, magic is a fundamental component of this one, and you kind of have to get on board with that.
Well, but that's the thing. I didn't use casts in Hades. I use casts constantly in Hades 2. It's the nature of the cast that's different. Because the casts in original Hades, it was, you know, your ranged attack for the most part. If you didn't have one, you know, and it would add a special effect. But it was a distance thing, primarily. And I didn't tend to play Hades at range at all, whenever possible. I wasn't into that. And as a result, I'm not into the special here.
When you say the special, do you mean for that first one weapon?
For that first, but even the second weapon, because it is also a, you know, firing some sort of ranged item. Like the sister blades have little daggers that throw out. I don't care for them either.
Yeah. So for what it's worth, they're not all ranged. I went in with that first two weapons assuming all of them were going to be ranged on the special.
Mm-hmm.
There are ones that are, like, much more close-up specials.
Yeah, I'm assuming the axe probably is, and...
Yeah.
But that's also a weapon I have no desire to use, because it's going to be slow and heavy. I just haven't unlocked it yet. But, God, there's a lot of collectible items, like resource collection things in this.
There sure are.
There are a lot of those, and that it's not that it feels overwhelming, but because there are so many more of them, it's like, all right, now I gotta go find this one and set it up. And that feels a little tedious to me. It's not bad, and it's fine, and I'll get the resources eventually, but it does feel like just, you know, all right, this is another thing. Do I have the right piece of equipment with me to go and get these reagents that I need specifically? Not so into that. It's fine, but could have been less complicated in terms of the sheer quantity of items. Oh, and I have one more complaint. I'm just getting the complaints out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't like the new character designs.
Really?
Just not into them.
I could not be more into them.
Yeah.
And that is a personal taste thing, but I absolutely love them.
Mm.
I love them.
And when I say new character designs, I mean, like, the redrawing of previous characters.
Oh, you're not into Poseidon now has abs on his abs.
It's fine.
And Zeus looks like he's been going to Pride events since the 70s, and, like, he's looking for a special someone. I love the new art.
See, I'm not into, like, the new Poseidon is one that I'm fine with, although I never see Poseidon anyway, so that's whatever. I like Demeter's new design.
Mm,
and
yes.
And I like that Artemis has been aged up a bit.
Yeah.
Apart from those, like, three... Eh, I could take or leave the rest of them. I do like the new designs. I like the new characters. Hecate is awesome. I don't understand the Cockney accent.
Look, I'm not going to question it. I'm not going to question it any more than I'm going to question the bowl full of coal on her head.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why has she got coal for a hat? I don't know, but it's lovely.
Yeah, the Cockney thing. I mean, it's delightful. It's just strange. It's just very odd. But the writing is very enjoyable. The delivery of the dialogue is right in line with what my expectation was set to with the first one. I'm into the plot.
Yeah, if I remember right, you didn't really care about the plot in the first one.
Well,
so
what I didn't like was the manner in which the hub area just sort of forced you into progressing narrative, you know. I mean, it didn't really force you. I could have just gone on and done the run, but if you want to, you know, upgrade your shit, you're going to have to talk to everybody and do all that. And it just felt like a lot of downtime in between runs when what I really wanted to do was get back in and do another combat encounter. And that's the flow of Hades, and it's fine. I came to get used to it. It ultimately, what won me over was the fact that there stopped being so much story to interrupt me. And then it was fine. So I sort of acknowledged this as a personal speed bump, having to stop and do all of that stuff. But it's not that it was ever bad. I just didn't care for how it was conveyed, like the manner in which it was delivered. And it feels like we're getting more stuff in combat areas than we did before. The stuff with Nemesis and Artemis is much more interesting in the field than I think the stuff with Thanatos was in Hades 1.
I agree. It feels like more like they have a motivation and reason to be there than to just pop up and be a thing.
Yeah. But it's good. I am enjoying it. I like the two weapons I have unlocked so far, apart from, you know, feeling like they're half crippled because of the range. But I love the cast. Love the cast. It's one of those tools that you have to sort of train yourself to be using. I'm going to go into this combat encounter, and the first thing I'm going to do is drop a cast.
Yes. Oh, I'm in a fight with a boss. I'm going to zoom in, drop that cast, get back a bit.
Right. And I love that. I think that works really well once you get that trained into you to do it. And I like the way that the boons interact with that one. I haven't experimented much with the sprint element of it.
Oh, the sprint element's really interesting the more you dig into it.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, like, instead of having multiple dashes, tying those boons to the sprint is an interesting shift. And I really only fooled around with it with regards to Zeus's boons, but they work really well in that context.
I think the thing that, like, has taken me some getting my head around with the sprint is that by default, it gives you a degree of time of invincibility, which is not that far off of what a couple of back-to-back dashes would have gotten you.
Yeah.
But additionally, a lot of the sprint options you can do additionally provide, like, combat offensive options. And learning to, like, use, I'm going to be invincible for a second, sprint at a problem as part of your offensive loadout has taken some getting used to that idea of, let's say I've got a swirling vortex of ice that's going to do damage and maybe freeze on my sprint. I sprint straight at the enemy knowing that I'm not going to take damage for a second, use that to get my cast dropped, do a sprint back out, and then reassess what I'm doing from there is really interesting, if certainly not the way that the first Hades encouraged you to use casts.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that, like, that first boss encounter really emphasizes the value of sprint abilities because of the way it is designed. As it goes through its phases, you'll have phases where you're being assaulted by the main boss one way or another, and there's a small horde of enemies that has to be eliminated before you can progress in the combat encounter.
Yes.
And having something tied to that sprint that allows you to simultaneously be avoiding the combat actions of the boss while dealing damage to the enemies surrounding without having to stop is huge.
This is exactly what I was thinking. It's it's such a good showcase of how sprint should be used, because, like, it was using the ice sprint in that boss fight that made it really click over for me. I don't have to stop to fight these little additional enemies, which the game really doesn't want me to be doing, because those summon circles are appearing right under my feet and I just have to keep moving.
Right.
I would say, like, the first mini-boss of the first area also sort of puts that emphasis on you, because that is one where, as it fires at you around in a circle, you need to be using sprint to move fast enough to avoid that attack, and going, this is something that you can just hold down and keep moving. You don't have to mash it, and getting how that sprint works into your head a bit.
Increasing the speed of that sprint in the Arcana is necessary, though. Like, it's just fast enough to be useful to avoid enemy encounters at its base speed, but just fast enough. You have to be well-timed and committed to the sprint in a lot of those circumstances. Once you get that first upgrade that's 20% faster, it ceases to be an issue. But you do almost need to have it.
And I will say, I really like the new upgrade system.
Yes.
With the tarot cards, where for the way that this one handles its equivalent of like the mirror you had in Hades 1 is there is this grid of cards, and you have two resources that you can be collecting throughout runs. One of them is primarily for unlocking new cards that will, like, grant you, you know, maybe have a one death defiance during a run, or gradually regain your magic bar or whatever. But once you've bought those cards, you have to equip them. And there is a separate resource you have to earn to level up how many points worth of cards you can have equipped at the same time. And you are sort of purchasing your way, revealing this expanding grid of cards, and having to balance, do I have enough points worth to equip all the cool things I want my character to do at once?
In a worse game, this would be tedious. Like, truly tedious. Because, again, it's, you know, you need this resource to unlock this, but you'll need these resources to unlock that. And there are a lot of them. And if the game weren't so compelling and fun to play, that you're able to get a lot of this stuff just sort of passively without focusing too much on it, it would be awful. It would be absolutely awful. And it's a testament to how good Hades is that this system can be this complex.
Yeah. Also, and like, I've been dying to get into this, without going too much into specifics, considering that this is out in early access right now, I went in expecting this game to be in a state similar to Hades 1 when it went into early access, which, if I remember correctly, was you had the first and second area of the game, and those first two locations, and that was as far as you could go.
That would have been my expectation going into this also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is not the case here. I can tell you I've been to at least five different locations, maybe six locations so far.
Holy Jesus.
There is a lot of fucking places to go in this. There is a point where this game basically says, what if there were two Hades in here? What if we gave you two games, kind of, maybe?
Is it an up-down thing? Because that's been hinted at.
Yeah, you know that upstairs staircase? There's a whole other Hades up that staircase. There's a whole different Hades up that staircase.
All right.
And it has its own different shit going on. I would say, when you get to go up that upward staircase, that is where this game really opened up for me.
Oh, great. Gets broader and more options. Cool.
Not even more options. It's not that there's more options or more things you have to think about. It's, while the down levels very much felt like more Hades, the up levels feel like where they're playing around with, here is a very different aesthetic idea, here's a very different layout of how a level could function. It's where they've put the weird, not the way that Hades 1 laid out levels stuff.
Okay.
It's like, okay, we've given you a good dose of there's a Hades that feels familiar to Hades 1 here. Cool, do you want some stuff that feels decidedly sequel? That's over this way.
Okay.
And I really like that approach. It's really interesting.
But yeah, it's a good game. I am happy with what they have. I'm looking forward to, in a few months when it's completed. I'm not into the UI either, or the, you know.
No. What are you not digging about it?
It just feels cheap. It doesn't feel like it's refined. It needs more work. I don't know, the big chunky bars of health in the lower left corner, it feels incomplete.
I've appreciated them as just, like, quickly readable.
Yeah, they are.
They've not bothered me, but, it's, having put, like, I put, like, 5 hours into the technical test, and I've put, like, maybe, I think 13 hours into it since it's gone into early access. And where I'm at currently is I've got a couple more weapons than you unlocked. I think I have all but one of the base weapons available. I've definitely found, like, my favourite weapon so far, and it's one that you haven't unlocked yet that is, without spoiling anything, a more... It is a decidedly ranged weapon, which I really was not a ranged weapon person in Hades 1. This is the ranged weapon that I'm having a lot of fun with. It's very satisfying to use. Like, my only, like, personal thing where I feel like the pacing of this isn't ideal is... I'm getting to a point where leveling up the amount of cards I can be holding in that sort of tarot card thing is getting a little prohibitive to level that up. And I think I found a way of maybe getting the resource for that a little, getting it quicker, which might counter it. There are too many interesting things I want to equip to keep pace with my ability to hold those things.
Yeah.
And if the worst problem I personally have with this game mechanically is you've given me too many cool things to try and I can't try them all at once, you know, there are worse problems a game could be having.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I came away from my time with the technical test very like, it's more Hades, but they've tweaked some things. Having now gone into, like, the actual early access game, I'm like, oh, there is considerably more stuff that feels different than I anticipated. And the scope of what they're doing is bigger than I anticipated. And that is a good place to be with something I was already having a great time with. It's really got its hooks in me. And I am ready to lose a lot of time to it.
I'm very upset. Zeus just offered me 3 boons and I'd like them all.
Even while talking about it, all I want to do is stop talking about it and go play it
some
more.
Yeah.
I just want to be playing it. Oh, and it plays great on Steam Deck. Oh, what was that?
Is that what you've been playing with this week, Steph?
Yeah, my Deucer plush. I thought I'd crack it out and just have a talk guest on the show. It's very cute.
It sounds like
it. Is.
Yeah, got it off Fangamer. Ages ago. It's a talking Deucer plush and it is really good. Fangamer do some good shit.
They do do some good shit.
I got a little Gator Game plush off them a while back as well, but it didn't come with the little strap to hold his wooden stick.
Oh no!
So I burned it.
Oh. Well, hey, Steph, you know what's good news? Hades 2 runs real good on Steam Deck, so you can play it on Steam Deck.
Excellent.
It runs real good.
Yeah, I have it downloaded on my Steam Deck now to play, like, once we've stopped. I would just start it, but I want to, like, listen to it and that, because it's fucking Hades, you know?
Yeah, the performances are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes it even more offensive that you were complaining about the cast, Conrad.
What have you been playing this week, Steph?
Something else that I downloaded onto my Steam Deck.
Yeah?
I think you know.
Do I know? I might know.
Today I finally remembered, oh shit, I should download Brotherhood of Steel before Podquisition. I'm not mega far in. Not super far in. Where am I right now? I've got it on my Steam Deck right now. I'm still killing red scorpions. You know how in some games they send you like into a cellar to kill 10 rats? It's one of the most parodied things ever. 25 red scorpions per room of the building, though. And red scorpions. Not like rats or mole rats, like what would be a starter villain. Like, when I was told to go in, because the game didn't give me any weapons at first, I had to like punch a bunch of raiders with my fists. And I didn't notice when I got a gun, but I only had fists or so I thought. And I was like, what? This is the second mission. 25 rad scorpions. They're fucking rad scorpions. Now, Conrad, you know what you said a couple weeks ago about this game's contempt for Fallout lore?
Yeah.
I punched 10 red scorpions to death before my health was in any way in risk.
Yeah.
What the... And the You know, the best thing about the fact that they reduced red scorpions to the level of cellar rats? The building is also full of rats! It's incredible. This is just the first hour of the game. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what's next. It's very mediocre as a dungeon crawler. Like, it's got the bare basics going for it. My early impressions seem to indicate that guns are mostly worthless, partially due to the nature of the game and partially due to, the genre of the game and right. partially due to the nature of the game. So I've got a baseball bat, and that down to your red scorpions in a couple of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to boot up New Vegas right now, get a starter baseball bat, and go find some red scorpions and start some shit, see what happens. The rats are terrible. They attack you until there's one or, like, between three and one left, and then they just circle you so that you can't hit them. Not a lot more to say about it at this juncture. Frankly, it's amazing that I was able to get that much humour out of an hour of it. So far, so knockoff Diablo kind of thing, really.
Right, well, but it feels like something that was cheaply thrown together to capitalise on the franchise.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, from what I can tell. Like, they put time and effort into it.
Yeah. See, my guess would have been some sort of reskin. Like, they were working on some dungeon crawler and then
decided to follow it?
Yeah, if it was developed from scratch to be a really good Fallout dungeon crawler. I'll tell you what, Conrad and Laura.
What?
They didn't do it.
Oh.
They were confident enough to start development on a sequel prior to release.
Yes, indeed. We talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were all in. But Brotherhood of Steel can't fucking lose. They did lose.
Hard, yeah.
Yeah, like, I tell you what, though. Like, you take away the Fallout thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's not worth fucking talking about, really. But it's fine.
Yeah, it's a passable game.
Like, yeah.
Of the time, it's definitely got that sort of B-grade... It would be charming if it weren't Fallout.
Yeah.
But because it's Fallout, because it has that pedigree, and there's an expectation associated with it, it becomes something wholly different.
A bit more offensive, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating little game, really.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Curious thing, like, it came out in 2003,
mm-hmm.
I believe, at a time where Fallout was not really big, if I recall correctly. Like, when was Fallout 2?
Well, Fallout 2 would have been, like, 2000, I think.
Oh, okay.
Maybe 99. Okay. Like, the original Fallout came out in 98, I believe.
Oh.
Because I was in college playing it for the yeah. first time.
Okay, the timing isn't so strange then.
Yeah.
For some reason, I always think Fallout is older than it is. I guess that just speaks to its influence, you know?
Well, and that first game feels really dated now. You know, on reflection.
Yeah, also true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look at, like, just looking at it, it looks like something older than it is. So yeah, like, 3 years then after Fallout 2.
I think they had Tactics come out in between too, so.
Oh shit, forgot about that. Yeah, so with Tactics and this, they were maybe just doing what the game industry loves to do and just assumed the thing that was really popular won't sell anymore. So let's reinvent the wheel.
Well, but they were even still, like, they had Fallout 3, a proper sequel to it in development at that time also.
Oh, God fucking knows then.
Yeah.
It God was, they, fucking knows.
They had fully plans to do a mainline iteration, and after this failed, shortly thereafter, they canceled
yeah.
Fallout 3 also.
Oh, I'll tell you what it is. Was this console exclusive? Was this just,
this
like,
was.
PS2?
Yes, PS2
That'll
and
be
Xbox.
It then, yeah.
Yeah.
They wanted Fallout on console mm-hmm. and didn't think anything other than action would fly, probably.
Which still is sort of the philosophy. It's just that the consoles are now more capable of accomplishing
yeah.
that goal.
And certainly I would not want to play Fallout 1 or Fallout 2 on a PS2.
No.
So, yeah, okay. Now we've got into the psychology. This is good. We're, like, reverse engineering what the fuck they were thinking. This is great. I'm going to get some red thread and pins and put them all on my wall.
We'll get the murder board up, yep.
Get the murder board up.
Who killed Fallout?
Oh, God. No, I left it too long. I was on the cusp of a dead wrapped in plastic line, but couldn't get it done.
Couldn't get there. Yeah.
Couldn't get it done. I hereby retire as the funniest person on the internet. It's been a wild ride. But yes, that's what I've been playing there, Brotherhood of Steel. I also, talking of games that we didn't know were coming, that I didn't know were coming out, despite being a big fan, I didn't realise that a fucking Puppet Master, I knew it was being made, I didn't realise the Puppet Master game had come out.
I downloaded it with the intent to give it a play on Monday, because I was very curious, and it has like single player content, so I was going to check that out, and then Hades 2 came out.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, that thing doesn't have a fucking prayer. Interesting, you know, free to play just on Steam so far. Not played it. Surprised I missed it, because I think it's fairly well known that I'm into my Puppet Master. I figured, like, someone would have hit me up on, like, social media. But then again, I'm not even looking at Twitter these days. They might.
I should have messaged you to let you know it was out, because I came to it a few days late, too. I think it dropped last Friday.
I'm just a bit behind. I mean, it took me 5 days to learn that last week Graham Linehan called me a transvestite. Weirdly enough, it made him no less divorced. So, Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, very interesting. Puppet Master, very much like yourself. Didn't get around to playing it yet. I did boot it up and had a look at the character models.
The character models are really good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the range of puppets they've got. I like that they put the Jester in, even though he can't fight for shit, and they've had him as a sort of support character. I am curious how that will play. But yeah, I love my Puppet Master. Well, I don't like any of the films or any of the media, but I somehow still love it.
I stand by Puppet Master the Littlest Reich.
Let's separate Puppet Master the Littlest Reich, because that is a transcendent piece of media that doesn't belong in any franchise. Mm. It should be put in a museum and regarded. Oh, I need to add that to my list of... sometimes we have Stupendium come visit and we have a cultural exchange where they put on, like, a classic musical. That they love and, you know, is iconic in some way. And I make her watch The Miami Connection or The Room or something like that. Actually, we've not done The Room yet. We've done Troll 2 and we've done Miami Connection. Almost said Hotline then. I will also say Puppet Master 2.
Solid.
Also, the one good film possibly Full Moon Studios ever made. And funnily enough, it's the one that's not on the Full Moon Network, because they don't have the rights to their one good film, which is perfect. That's just Full Moon for you.
That is what I would expect. The product description for the Puppet Master game said something that I struggled to believe, and I didn't bother doing any more research to verify if this was true. But let me just bring up the store page here, and I'll read this from the description, because it seemed laughable that could be the case. Here we go. Plays a variety of malicious little fiends ripped straight from the film series, spanning iconic characters like Blade, Jester, and Six Shooter, as well as deep cuts from the franchise like Totem and Mephisto. And officially, for the first time, the puppets crossover with another Twisted Full Moon Features franchise demonic toys.
Bullshit.
They, I was going to say,
more than once.
Yeah, there has to. I know there was a Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys.
Yeah, I've watched it. It's shameless.
Do they mean this is the first time that they have original content created to combine these two things instead of just, like, using shit they shot?
That might be it, because Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys is a clip show. So is Dollman versus Demonic Toys, which they just... And they've not met before. This isn't clip shows of them fighting before. It's just clip shows from Puppet Master films and the Demonic Toys films, with very occasional sort of they're near each other a bit like, for the 5 minutes of original content filmed.
Okay, so then this is correct, then. This is the first time they've actually crossed over with them, as opposed to just being put in parallel of the same product.
Yes, that... very, very, very... I love Full Moon. Fucking hell. We were talking last week about dirty carnies. Fucking carnies.
Fucking carny shit right there.
Carny shit. like, I... They make such... Like, they don't even make good bad films. I couldn't add most Puppet Master films, with the exception of The Littlest Reich, to a bad movie night, because they're not entertaining.
They are budget trauma.
Yeah. and they commit a lot of sins that those, like, D movies do, which is waste time. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have a 15-minute establishing shot, because that will get them to their 80 minutes.
Yep.
No, that's not fair. 88. That's Full Moon. I love the designs, though. Like, that's the thing. As a kid, I was fascinated by Puppet Master and terrified of Tunneler, because, yeah, it was... They look fucking cool. One of the prides of my collection and nerd tat is my life size blade replica. Mm-hmm. It just looks so fucking cool. And I like the Jester Torch. Just such a fucking cool design. It's this fucking metal dude with a flamethrower.
I love the Leech Woman just on the basis that she exists.
Fucking, she is terrifying. Like, the look of her and I would say that's the one thing from the first film that is actually effective in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though what they really did was just take a leech and stick it to a wooden doll's face and tell us to just imagine it's coming out of her. It's still really gross. So yeah, God, I kind of want to put on Littlest Reich. I can't.
It's so good.
I can't. It's a masterpiece of shit films. It really is.
It is one of those films, like, it's not often that I look at a piece of art and think, wow, they really went there. But they really went there with The Littlest Reich.
What was the thing? There was something about a character having a reason to fight the Littlest Reich. And then what's his face? That comedian... Who's a legit one who's
Thomas
in
Thomas Lennon. He's amazing.
Thomas Lennon, yeah, when he's like, yeah, I got a reason. About 6 million of them. Just fucking hell, this film. I want to call it tone deaf, but it's got to have some measure of the tone in order to go fucking against it so much and so gleefully.
It knows exactly what it's doing. It just doesn't
absolutely.
Give a shit.
And somehow it commits so hard to that, it becomes okay for a very strict definition of the word okay.
Yeah, under this circumstance alone, this is acceptable. Because you are so willing to commit to this, we're going to give it a pass.
Yeah. so yes, with content warnings, I wholeheartedly recommend Puppet Master The Littlest Reich. It's something else. Can't recommend any of the others except maybe Puppet Master 2. As for the game, we've managed to talk a lot around it, and none of us have played it. But I'm always down to talk Puppet Master, or just any Full Moon. Once again, I must... another one I'd actually recommend is Head of the Family, because that is a perfect example of how Full Moon makes films, which is, I've come up with a pun... Let's build a movie around it.
Mm-hmm.
And Freaks, I think it's... No, it's not called that. It's called Hideous. I think it's called Hideous. That one is also very good. Mostly because there's a character in it. He's called Napoleon Lazar, and he's fucking glorious. Also, Jacqueline Lavelle is in that one, and she's been in a few Full Moon films, and she's incredibly beautiful and such a talent, and sometimes she exposes the rest for our pleasure. So... That's my review of the entire Full Moon library.
Yeah. Anyone played anything else this week?
No. I had other things to play. I had things that I was like, I'm going to play these games this week. Puppet Master is one. There's another one I'm so curious about. It's Knowledge or No Lady, I think is what its translated title comes to. It's a visual novel made... out of first-person FMV footage.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm so curious. Maybe I'll have time this week.
I've got one that I really want to check out, and it's on my list, but again, Hades 2 happened and kind of got in the way. That's caught my attention, called Tales of Kenzara Zao. It is a indie game that's been published under, like, EA's "we'll give you some money to make your indie thing" label. That is a Metroidvania about a person coming to terms with, like, grief and trying to battle the god of death. Absolutely fucking gorgeous visually. I've heard a lot of really positive things about it, but just looking at footage, for a 3D side-scrolling Metroidvania, it looks fucking gorgeous, and there's a lot of really interesting character design stuff going on. It's on my radar, and I had it downloaded, and then Hades 2 happened, but I'm gonna check it out. It's on my list.
I actually have another puppet game I'm thinking of checking out.
What puppet game are you gonna check out?
Jack Holmes, Master of Puppets. I've looked at trailers for it, and it looks like something that would either be, like, hilariously brilliant or utter shit. Or brilliantly shit. But it's some, like, horror shooter about an abandoned theme park, and the puppet designs, like, the puppets attack you, and there's, like, little cute Animal Crossing-looking monsters, like, creatures coming out, and it's just shooting their heads off. I'm very curious. But other than that, I've started a bunch of shit but can't really... I've got 5 Final Fantasy games on the go now. I've just started a bunch in the past couple of weeks. 10, which I talked about, and 9, and 7, and 8. And yesterday I started 6. And 6 is the one I've not gone through the whole...
6 is the one with the mechs.
The one with the mechs. Like, if people say 7 isn't the best one, a lot of people will go with 6 instead.
I think 6 is one of... It's one of the ones that I remember very fondly. It is definitely the best of the ones before they moved to 3D.
And I've always known that, and I've often wanted to do a video about why 9 is the best one, but I've always held off because I'm like, I need to get through 6 all the way this time. I've started it many times and not gotten very far at all.
It is a game that I love, but that I had the same experience with, where multiple times I picked it up, didn't get very far in, put it down. It was the same experience I had with the original Mass Effect. A game that I love, but that the opening just didn't get its hooks in me right.
Yeah. With this one, I think it's down to me. It's my attention, the old ADHD, and that I find RPGs especially have gotten harder to play over the years, as certainly, you know, I went such a long time without treatment for the ADHD, and it doesn't get worse, but your coping strategies and just through sheer exhaustion, you can get worse at handling it. And I have reached a point now where I super struggle. I wanted to do a review of Octopath Traveler 2 and Sea and Stars and the one that where you, the Groundhog Day one. I just can't get far enough into them now before the engine peters out on me, and it's a shame. I fucking love RPGs.
ADHD's a real fucking joke.
It really is. But, you know, my hope is that next week I can actually talk about 6 with some degree of experience. But we'll see. But that's me.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about a couple of newsy bits before we finish up for today?
I reckon we can get away with it, yeah.
So, the industry continues to be just closing studios left and fucking right. And we haven't talked about them recently, but there's a big one that's just happened that's maybe worth discussing, which is Xbox has closed a handful of studios, including Arkane Austin, who made the Dishonored games and then Redfall.
Indeed. We do need to just clarify, because I've seen people online confused about that. Arkane as a whole isn't sharp.
Yes.
But Austin is, and like you said, they made Dishonored, so, like, that was a lot. That was a really good team.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a really good team that was forced to make one game they didn't want to make that they didn't have experience in making, and that game turned out not great. And rather than letting them continue to exist and go back to making the thing that they're good at that everyone loves, they're just gone now.
The WWE approach. We'll inflict this on you, and if it doesn't get over, it's your fault.
Yeah. Tango Gameworks is also gone.
Oh, that's a shame.
The Evil Within developer Hi-Fi Rush, which, you know, just got ported to PlayStation as part of Xbox's big we'll port things to PlayStation to financially support making cool, flashy, creative stuff like Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah.
Hi-Fi Rush is a... Like, Tango Gameworks is particularly frustrating because, like, up until, like, days ago, Xbox and Bethesda's social media were, like, praising various awards that Hi-Fi Rush had won.
That is sick.
Only to just fucking shut
that
them.
That is fucking sick. And
yeah.
The fact that Bethesda was the one making the, like, giving out the praise as well, which, it's not Bethesda's fault, but they were acquired by Microsoft for a fucking shitload of money. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Microsoft has spent billions, not just on the Activision acquisition, but on, like, fighting challenges to it. And they shut down a bunch of these fucking studios. Like I've said before, once you start laying people off, shutting things down, you should be barred from any more acquisitions.
They're not shutting anything down that they acquired in Activision Blizzard.
Yeah. This is the reason why I thought this one was worth bringing up. Yeah. Is, like, clearly they wanted to do layoffs to, like, to bring some money in, but they can't fucking risk touching any of the stuff they just bought because there's eyes on that stuff.
Yeah.
So it really feels like these studios got shut down, not because they made the most sense to shut down, but they wanted to shut something down and they couldn't shut down the stuff they wanted to.
Yeah.
For that little instant cash.
The capitalism will have its sacrifice, and it doesn't matter really to the industry where that comes from. Because let's face it, they're not in the business of making high quality games. The studios are, and publishers will sell them, but they don't care how good the game is. They don't care. They care what they can, like, put into it to extract as much money as possible. In which case, you know, the Activision studios are probably a lot better for them. Unfortunately, that means Tango fucking, like, just good fucking studios are just burned to keep up an illusion of perpetual growth.
I can't point to anything that, like, Xbox first-party studios have published in the last few years that is as original, creative, instantly, like, catching people's attention as Hi-Fi Rush was. Like, Hi-Fi Rush, whether you like it, like, enjoyed the game or not, was, like, a rare, surprising, oh, this is something new and original and not Xbox coming from Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's the one that I keep looking at and going, really, you're gonna bin them right now.
Yeah. One wonders, of course, like, during all this, like, the existing Activision leadership, that a lot of which seems to be still there and entrenched, like, just how many millions of dollars went upwards to, like, went to them and their offshore bank accounts, you know?
Like, how many executives could have not taken a bonus this year? And in exchange, Tango Gameworks could still be making creative, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Or Arcane Austin could still make some cool, interesting stuff. Because maybe 11 executives or something at the end might not get a bonus this year.
Yeah.
But they get to keep making cool shit.
Well, it's like I always say. Like, I don't want to have this conversation about how games are expensive to make and that's why they need, like, aggressive monetization and they need to cut corners and all of this shit. We will have the conversation about the expense of making games when we first address the expense of making game executives richer. Like, money is bleeding out of the industry, going into the pockets of a handful of people. And it's people who could just not. Who could just not have pocket money for a month. And that's all it is to them. They are so rich that what they get is pocket money. And the fact they can't give that up and have thrown away incredible game development teams is obscene. It's an obscenity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. It's the tragedy of this sort of thing is that the people who profit from these products do not give fuck one about them.
Like, no,
they are,
not at all.
Yeah.
They're lines on a balance sheet for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, it's deeply unfortunate. I don't think... Look, I'm not a big AAA game fan anyway. Like, a lot of the content they produce is just not stuff that particularly interests me anymore. And it's in part because I kind of feel like I've played a lot of this already. And so when you see something like Tango get shut down in and amongst this, something that was actually original and different, it hurts more.
Yeah, it's so laser-guided. Not that any studio deserves to be shut down.
No.
But of all the companies making the same fucking games, to go after the one that stood out feels so fucking targeted. And I'm sure, you know, they didn't do it out of malice or spite.
No.
But
they looked at what was cohesive for their portfolio, and this is an outlier in their portfolio. Like, it is inconsistent with the rest of the shit that they produce.
That's it. Yeah, like, yeah, sure, Hi-Fi Rush was critically acclaimed, award-winning. I couldn't really play it, but I recognize it was a brilliantly made game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not like the others.
But again, the thing that's really frustrating about that is, what's the Xbox executive whose name? Phil Spencer. I wish I had the quote in front of me, but there's a quote that people have been digging up around this, where Phil Spencer was talking about Hi-Fi Rush and explicitly going, like, we love these kinds of projects coming out of our teams, and we really want to encourage teams that we have and studios that we have to try making things like this that are outside of their wheelhouse. There is an explicit quote from like 3 months ago where he's talking about, we wish more of our studios would try and make weird, not the thing we expect of them games like Hi-Fi Rush. But that's clearly not fucking true.
Laura, hold your horses before you get us in trouble. Are you implying that Microsoft might not be 100% honest?
I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you want to draw that connotation, you can draw that connotation.
We're just providing the facts. We're just asking questions. Is Phil Spencer a lying sack of shit? Does his graphic t-shirts over blazers make him look like a game journalist from the 2000s? Therefore, the lowest of all human trash. These are just questions we ask. Is Bobby Kotick a sexually abusive pervert? They're just questions.
They are just questions. There's a couple of other Xbox-related stories this week, but there's one that I think is worth talking about that's not on our little docket for today. This particular news dropped as we were recording, and I just think this is a... have a laugh at an executive doing a terrible job of doing their job story.
Lovely.
So, you know, A Little Big Planet, PlayStation exclusive.
Yeah.
Made by Media Molecule, who are now, essentially a first-party studio for PlayStation.
Yeah.
So, there is a story that was shared by Minimax, talking to Mark Healy, who is one of the co-founders of Media Molecule, talking about the fact that Microsoft once tried to drunkenly convince Media Molecule to jump ship from Sony.
What?
Okay. Okay, so the story goes, and I'll jump into quotes in a minute, but at this point, Little Big Planet had, like, been announced, but there wasn't anything legally on paper to say this has to be a PlayStation exclusive.
God, that's weird to think about.
Yeah, informally, like, that was the decision that was being made, and Media Molecule were like, yeah, we're going to make it for PlayStation, and this is before they'd been, like, purchased, like, they'd become a first party. So we jump into the story. Technically, we could have done that. We could have been like, yeah, fuck it, let's go with Microsoft. They would give us a load of money. So someone from Media Molecule and someone from Microsoft were getting drunk together. We went out and got a bit drunk, and it was literally just as we were dropping the guy off at his hotel. He was kind of like, oh shit, I was sent on a mission here. I've got to say something. And then he goes, by the way, guys, you know, we would be happy to blah, 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 take you on if you want to jump ship to us or something like that.
Now, look, I'm not saying that I have gone out for drinks with someone before and then hurriedly tried to close the deal on the way home. I'm not saying this is relatable. I'm just asking questions.
Yeah. Apparently, you could tell he was almost embarrassed to say it, because it would have been a very naughty thing to do.
Oh my god, they are describing a night out with me.
Right! And the way Media Molecule tell the story, we didn't take the offer up because, you know, we're nice people and we were very grateful that Sony were giving us a chance and we're going to promote our game very heavily. We thought it would be a little bit shitty to jump ship to Microsoft.
Yeah, it's a sense of fidelity that always gets in the way with me, you know.
Yeah, so, some unnamed person at Microsoft at the end of a night of drinks tried to be like, hey, if you wanna just, like, come be an Xbox gamer, you could do that.
That'd be
fine. We wouldn't stop you coming and being an Xbox gamer, it's all right. you can do it if you want to.
Oh, God, you're very good at that. That's brilliant. I just got a real image of an executive of like shirt slightly untucked, hands in pockets, looking away a bit, but still close.
I have a very specific Microsoft executive in mind that I will never be shaken from the visual, who I will not name, but I absolutely see it.
I can think of a few based on that.
It's got real vibes of In 2006, they'd have needed to be, like, one of the newer executives kind of almost being hazed by other executives. Someone's got to go for a try of it. We're a bit awkward. You fucking do
it. In 2006, yeah, I think, yeah, now I definitely think it's this guy.
Right? So, yeah, that's fun.
It's weird to think about a time before, like, where Little Big Planet was potentially, well, where Media Molecule was a free agent. I've associated them with PlayStation for so long that it's weird.
Right. It's weird in that same way that, like, it will always be weird that Rare isn't with Nintendo.
Mm.
It's certain companies, you just imagine them together.
Yeah.
So we had one other bit of news this week that it's been a sort of opened and closed story, but it's still worth talking about because it got pretty loud over the weekend. Helldivers 2 had a bit of a not great PR moment over the weekend. I didn't know this. Helldivers 2 is already like the fifth best-selling PlayStation Studios game ever released. Like, it's fucking ridiculous how well it's selling. But a lot of that goodwill very quickly fell away because on PC, which apparently PC is where most people are playing this, an update was announced, and that update was going to require Steam users playing the game to have a PlayStation Network account and log into their PlayStation Network account on PC to play. And there's a lot of reasons people weren't happy about
it. Now, as I understand it, this was always intended to be the policy that They were going to require it, and due to the challenges that they had with launch, it wasn't implemented at that time.
The way I've seen it presented in some of the statements doing the rounds is they knew it was going to be unpopular.
Well, I'm sure they know.
They wanted to wait till it was out the door before putting it in.
That should
once
not
people
be,
were already on board.
That shouldn't be legal.
But the product description stated that it was a requirement prior to this announcement. Like, this had always been in there, they just hadn't implemented.
Yeah, they just deliberately kept it quiet and didn't point people to it and let people quietly assume it wasn't happening.
And it's not something people are going to look for necessarily when they buy a game. Like,
of course not.
Between this and the things we've had with microtransactions being added in post-launch and stuff like that, like, there needs to be some fucking regulation. Well, I mean, you know, across the board there needs regulation, but this specifically, because they're selling games, they're not inviting us into their fucking parlor.
But I think, and this is one of those instances where regulation wouldn't fix it, because they had stated that this was going to be required. It's the same as saying this is sponsored content in that one line at the bottom of a YouTube video, right?
I get that, but I really think if it were found out that they deliberately withheld it because they knew it would be unpopular. Now, whether they're covered or not, they should be pinned to the fucking wall for that.
Absolutely.
The reason I would say I think it's different to the line in the EULA is in this case, even if it said at launch, it said, you do require a PSN account to play this on PC, but for several months that was demonstrably not the case. And I think it is a fair consumer expectation to go, that line seems to be an error, no one is being asked to have a PSN account. The state it is in currently is I can purchase it, and that does not seem to be an enforced requirement.
If anything, saying that they required a PlayStation Network account when they didn't was false advertising, and I tell you what, they should be pinned to the wall for that!
So, yeah, there's a couple of reasons people were upset about this. Like, one of them was, like, the perceived deception going on. There is an official statement that they knew 6 months ago that this was going to be a thing that would be in the game, and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Additionally, PSN has had a history of customers' data getting leaked. Mm-hmm. It has happened. I think someone pulled together a list of 6 times it had happened,
Fucking hell. You know,
I can understand people who are a bit cautious of having a PSN. But the one that picked up a lot of traction was, there's a list of over 100 countries where you can have a Steam account, but you can't have a PSN account. And people from those countries who would purchase the game would lose access to the game.
That,
like, the game would just
fucked. Stop
being playable for them.
And again, like, this is where we get into that, like, you can't keep doing this, industry. You can't keep changing the deal after it's been sold because of stuff like that. In the case of that, if they knew that PlayStation Network was going to be a requirement, they should never have sold it in that country. There is a wall somewhere and a couple of pins in my pocket. There are many ways Sony should be pinned to the wall. There is no scenario, in fact, in which they shouldn't be pinned to the wall.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, so their explanation as to why they were doing this was it would allow for improved moderation functionality, and they've backtracked now. They took a little over a weekend to backtrack, and they're like, oh, we'll find other ways to do it. Basically, it was a couple of days of, like, mass negative reviews on Steam. It went from overwhelmingly positive to overwhelmingly negative. Seems to have been backtracked.
I mean, in fairness to the game, they should have maybe given it another 3 weeks, because that's what everyone told me when I couldn't play it for two.
Yeah.
So let's be patient with Helldivers. Let's give it that grace period that we don't seem to give other games. Fuck's sake.
Now, I will say, there is one thing that I found amusing and, like, a nice little bow on this story, however, which is... the CEO of Arrowhead Games clearly has a little bit of a sense of humour about the whole situation, and, like, you know, is taking the negative reviews and the criticism in good stride. They're working on adding a cape design to Helldivers 2 that has a design that is the downvote graph from Steam.
Okay.
Where it's a blue cape with a bunch of orange lines of varying lengths and then suddenly really big orange lines going down.
Okay, I like that. I really like that. And I don't... If Sony had sort of pushed that out, pinned them to the wall for it, but the developer, because, you know, they don't make these fucking, like, top-level decisions, them poking fun at it, I'm all about. That's good. That's quality self-deprecation, that.
Right, it's a bit of fun, and I can get on board with that. I think that's it. I think we've done it.
All right. We are done for another week, but we're not done with shit that you can look at and hear and experience. Laura, you might have a couple of things on offer.
Me? I sure do. I definitely do. You can find my stuff at Laura K. Buzz pretty much everywhere. Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, TikTok, Patreon, that's the one that pays the bills. Blue Sky, Mastodon, all that kind of good stuff. The same day as this episode goes up, there will be a bonus little episode 1.5 of Control Alt Access, my accessibility video game podcast I do with Arevia.
Great name, by the way.
Which was, I really like it. We recorded a half hour little bonus episode live from GAConf, the Game Accessibility Conference, because we were both there in person, talking about the first day of talks from that event. That'll be up. It's just half an hour of signposting you to really good accessibility talks that happened during that event and where you can find them and which ones we recommend checking out. Other than that, formally announced date and time for this year's Accessibility Summer Showcase. It's going to be taking place Friday, June 7th, 4 p.m. UK, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Look out for 45 plus minutes of video game trailers, announcements, and news, all focused on games that have a big focus on video game accessibility. Without getting too into the weeds about what you can expect to see, I'll tease one of them today. I'll tease one. We've got something from Playtonic that we're going to be showing off, which we're very excited about. So that's pretty cool. It'll be available with American Sign Language, British Sign Language, audio descriptions, the wonderful Sightless Combat, who is a fantastic blind Twitch streamer, is going to be doing our audio description track this year, so look forward to that. What about you, Conrad? What are you up to, and where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me at Conrad Zimmerman on Instagram and Blue Sky. You can hang out with me on Twitch, where I am probably going to be playing Hades 2, despite the other things I want to be playing. You could buy Anti-Capitalist Propaganda and Jimquisition merchandise at mercenarycreative.com. Go get your gay shit ahead of Pride. And everything that I do online gets supported through Patreon at patreon.com/fistshark. And you know who else has a Patreon? Stephanie Sterling.
That is correct. Patreon.com/Jimquisition. That supports this, that, and the other. Over at thejimquisition.com, we have a review published at the moment for Stellar Blade. Do check that out if you want. As far as wrestling dates go, obviously, you know, there's a good chance you're not at Leeds tonight. So my next appearance will be, my next confirmed appearance is... Actually, I don't fucking know. But after last Sunday's really good title show, I know I will be in Huddersfield for every title show till the end of the year. My next time there will be the 7th of July. I should also be there 1st of September and 13th of October, as myself and Priscilla, Queens of the Space Age, challenge enter the tournament for the tag team titles. Over at True Grit, to my next appearance in Leeds will be 20th of July. And I believe on the 10th of July or the 8th, one of the two, I'll be in Blackpool as well. Lots of other stuff to talk about. Got some cool stuff coming with Vampire Survivors as well. Look forward to all that. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.